one of the books I always assign is To Life by Harold Kushner, and I reread it every few years. And every time I read it, by the end of the book, I'm like, God, I should convert to Judaism. This thing is great. So high recommend for that book. Oh. Even it's a little dated, but it's beautiful. Yeah.
Welcome to Jew-ish, the show for Jews, non-Jews, the Jew curious, just all the varieties of Jew-ishness. If you've been listening so far, you've heard a name come up again and again, but until now, you have not gotten to hear her voice. I'm talking about Rabbi Eliana Fischel of Washington Hebrew Congregation. Rabbi Fischel jumped on board with the show really early on and has been super supportive and instrumental in hooking me up with some of the voices you've already heard, or that you will hear, or that you'll go back and hear. But today, it's her turn. I'm bringing her in at this point in our conversion mini-series to bust some myths and give a little gravitas to what we've talked about so far. We'll have a few laughs, we'll hit some of the nuts and bolts and basic questions you probably have about conversion. Or, okay, fine, that I had about conversion. And as always, don't forget to check the show notes on this and every episode for a glossary of terms you might hear. Okay, here's the show.
So, hi. I am Rabbi Eliana Fischel. I am an associate rabbi at Washington Hebrew Congregation in Washington, D.C. and in Potomac, Maryland. I've been a rabbi here for 5 years. I am a graduate of Hebrew Union College, Jewish Institute of Religion, which is the Reform Jewish Seminary. I was in the New York campus. And here at Washington Hebrew, I run 2239, which is our 20s and 30s young professional community. As well as some communities for new moms and pregnant women, and an LGBTQ cohort, a Jews of Color cohort, and I spend a lot of time with our teens.
That is a lot. Basically, you're the cool young rabbi is where we're at. You're the
cool is a relative term when rabbi is followed by it, but sure.
You're the rabbi for the young kids.
I don't know about that.
Well, okay, so we're here today because you were very enthusiastic in my questions about like conversion. And I know that it's a little bit different for Reform Jews. Mm-hmm. And that's, I guess, I said the sect and my mom corrected me. What is it called? It's not called a sect in Judaism. It's called
a sect or a denomination.
Denomination. Yeah. Strain or stream, I think she said too. I don't know. Anyway.
Lots of words. Yeah.
It's all good. So I grew up always hearing that first of all, Judaism does not proselytize. Like, it's forbidden from doing that. We don't go out and solicit people to join. That's just not a thing Jews do. But I've also heard, or I was also raised hearing, that you're actually supposed to turn converts away the first 3 times that they ask, ostensibly because, you know, being the chosen people is actually a huge burden or whatever it is. Is that real? Is that true? Do we still do that? Like, do you know where that comes from?
Sure. So the image I have of Jews turning away a potential convert 3 times is Charlotte from Sex and the City, when she like shows up with platters of food and she's like, please, I just want to be Jewish. So
I think food is a good reason.
I think that's probably how I was introduced to it when I was a kid. But for one, that's a minchag, which is a minchag is a custom. There's no law that says you have to say no to someone who wants to join Judaism. Mm-hmm. You know, off of a little bit of research, it seems like it's coming from the Book of Ruth, where Naomi told Ruth to turn away 3 times. Right. Ruth kept saying, Naomi, I'm going to come with you. I'm going to come with you. And Naomi said, no, go away. Like, go live your life, and said it 3 times. And so there's perhaps a connection there. But this is really coming from custom. And I think it has helped in ways to make Judaism feel elusive and to feel elite. But actually, the Reform Judaism steered clear of that in the 1990s. In the 1990s, we took a big push. The Union for Reform Judaism did this explicitly, saying, actually, we really love what we have to offer. And Judaism is pretty amazing. And it gives a lot of meaning and gives a lot of spirituality to people's lives. And we think we have it pretty great. And so while we're not going to go out and proselytize, we're certainly going to tell people how great we think we are and how great Judaism is. And definitely someone who wants to join our faith, absolutely, we're going to welcome them with open arms, and we are not going to make any more barriers than already necessary to become Jewish. And that also goes for interfaith families as well, right? Mm-hmm. That anyone who wants to join our faith as someone who is Jewish adjacent to a partner is going to be welcomed with open arms as well. We're not going to put up barriers to make that more difficult for them.
I love that. That's so fun. And I'm so happy that you said Jewish adjacent, because I think even like my friends often, once they start to get curious or ask me questions about like my life, they even start to, I think of themselves as Jewish adjacent, which is like lovely and sweet. And I was always raised to be like, oh yeah, you want to, I mean, I have, you know, as in most places, there's not a ton of Jewish people around numerically. So, you know, yeah, all my Goyish friends come join me for Hanukkah and come mm-hmm. for a Seder, and I'll make you salmon because you're a pescatarian, and like, you know, they love all that stuff. Yeah. But so that does raise the question. So is there an official process? Like, do you have to, is becoming Jewish like getting a degree? Do you have to take certain classes and then you're in? Or can you sort of like self-identify as Jewish and then ta-da, you're Jewish?
So the process to become Jewish is different depending on the sect of Judaism that you're in, and even different depending on the congregation you're in, and even different depending on the rabbi that you're working with. So at Washington Hebrew, we do around 40 conversions a year, which most of our congregation doesn't really know about. So we take conversion really seriously, that it's up to the person who's converting to sort of share that with everybody. We're never going to share who we're working with.
And it's like personal, right? It's like kind of a private, intimate thing.
It's really personal. And in our tradition, it says actually that you're not supposed to publicize a convert, that could, because once they become Jewish, they are as Jewish as Moses, as Jewish as you and me, and should never be sort of asked when they became Jewish. That would be seen as sort of inappropriate or disrespectful, right? That no, they were at Sinai just like I was.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So the way that we think about conversion is actually that you've always had a Jewish soul. We're just giving it a little bit of like light and water and watching it grow. Those are words from my amazing colleague, Rabbi Aaron Miller, that I use all the time.
That's so nice. What an image.
Yeah, really beautiful. And so what we do here at Washington Hebrew is it's a really personalized study that takes about a year. They meet with a rabbi or cantor once a month for almost an entire year. We assign what I do is I assign a book at every meeting. I sort of have a list that I go through, going from the most general to more specifics. And then as a student gets involved, they start asking their own questions and I give them books that personalize to them. I also assign an experience that being Jewish is so much more than belief or faith or what we think. It's really about behavior, right? That's why we're not really a religion. We're not really an ethnicity. We're not really a culture. We're kind of everything in between.
Yeah.
And so I don't think you can really become Jewish unless you've tried lighting Shabbat candles, unless you've tried some version of kosher, unless you've tried some version of adult study and Torah study. And what I say to my students is, I don't expect you to do this as a Jew all the time, right? Because I don't want to give higher expectations to you than my typical Joju congregant. But I do expect you to try it and to see what's meaningful for you and to see what sticks. And so each month they get these assignments and we talk about them together. Also, those meetings are also pretty pastoral. I'm not a counselor, but they take on that role too, because it's a huge identity shift. And especially to take on a minority identity is really challenging sometimes, especially when people are coming from families of different faiths or families of no faith. And how do you approach those conversations? So a lot of the meetings are like that as well. We also highly recommend that they take a class we provide called 12 Jewish Questions, which is a version of Introduction to Judaism, but is for everybody. Yeah. It's for people who are starting a Jewish journey, but also people who are reconnecting to their Judaism as an adult. So we have congregants in there who are like 80 and have never studied before, but just retired and want to learn about Judaism, as well as people who are just starting on their Jewish path. It's a wonderful course. And then at the end of all this, sort of around the 10-month mark, we have a conversation that's like, how do you feel? And before that, at any point, if someone says, you know, I actually think this isn't for me, great. They haven't wasted my time. The point is for people to find their place in their spirituality and their religion. I'm not in the business of making Jews, right? We don't proselytize.
We're not selling you something.
Right. I'm not selling them anything. If it's not right, it's not right. I do ask them not to ghost me. I'm like, if you could just let me know that you're going to go. Sometimes they do, but it's okay. And then we decide to bring them to Beit Din. So Beit Din sounds really intimidating, and I always try to say that it's not. Technically, it's a court, so it's three, really intimidating.
Beit Din means house of religion, right?
House of judgment.
House of judgment.
So it's literally the word you use for a court. And it's three highly educated Jews, so we always use three clergy or our education staff. And it's really, for us, it's really just a conversation. We're not quizzing people. We are just talking to them about their spiritual journey and their Jewish journey. Questions that would have been really hard a year before, mm-hmm. but now actually are just part and parcel of their life, right? About how they engage with their life, how their relationship with God, their relationship with holidays, their relationship with Shabbat, what they struggle with.
What would be like an example question?
An example question would be, how has your relationship with God changed from before this process to now? And mm-hmm. and what do you sort of hope for your relationship with God in the future? Another question would be, you know, you've learned a ton over the past year, classes, books, whatever. What have you loved? What have you were like, yes, that is what I want. And what are you still really struggling with? Because part of being Jewish is taking on this name, Yisrael, which means to struggle with God. Mm. We love a struggle. So what are you
really
struggling
with?
We really do.
Why are we like this?
So what are you struggling with? After that Beitian, we take them. They also have to write a spiritual autobiography or a personal statement as part mm-hmm. of that as well. We then take them to the mikveh. Addis Israel here in Washington, D.C. has a beautiful, beautiful mikveh. Mm-hmm. And they immerse three times. And then we do a welcome ceremony for them. And as we say, they come out of that water and they are as Jewish as anyone.
Wow. I feel like, I don't know, maybe you've heard this before. I hope not. Maybe, probably. I feel like almost that the people who have done that sort of formal education, like, oh shit, are they more Jewish than me? Because I don't know. I have not had. Although yeah. I sit here saying that and I'm like, I haven't had those conversations. Then it's like, okay, but they all didn't have to learn Hebrew and then stand in front of a congregation and like forget half of their Torah portion.
Right, and chant Torah when you're 13 and so awkward.
Oh, the misery.
The worst. So most of our conversions are actually not part of a couple, but the ones that are right where they are engaged or going to be married or very serious with someone who is Jewish, we always talk to the Jewish partner, and I always say, you're about to become 10 times more Jewish than you ever imagined, because so many Jews sort of leave their Judaism in a pediatric realm, right? They do the really embarrassing thing of standing up there at the Bima at age 13 and then never really come back to it. Mm-hmm. And then here is this partner that they love who's engaging with Judaism in an adult way with really intense questions and not just like learning about Judaism separate from ourselves, like a graduate program, right? But really about like, what does it mean for us and, mm-hmm. and for me and for how I'm growing? And that is going to engage you in a different way. And so, yes, we're creating lots of Jews, but also we're creating a lot more adult Jews.
More Jewish-y Jews.
Yeah, more Jewish-y Jews. More Jewish-y Jews, for sure.
Well, that is so cool. And it's like, I never really thought about it really in that way. Although, and honestly, you know, it was my friend Nancy who made me think about it. Like mm-hmm. I got her the Jewish Book of Why for Hanukkah mm-hmm. a couple years ago. And then I was like, oh, I maybe should also have a copy of this.
Yeah.
And I bought myself one too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And sure. Like, you know, maybe I haven't opened it or whatever. We'll see. Maybe I will this year. Any day might be the day.
Yeah.
Who's to say?
One of the books I always assign is To Life by Harold Kushner. And I reread it every few years. And every time I read it, by the end of the book, I'm like, God, I should convert to Judaism. This thing is great. So high recommend for that book. Oh. Even it's a little dated, but it's beautiful. Yeah.
That sounds awesome. Okay. I'll put that on my list of things mm-hmm. to do. My ever-growing list as I go through this like podcast process.
Absolutely.
So that is really cool. So it's not, you know, you can't fail out, right? Like you don't get to the Beit Din and then answer their questions wrong. And they're like, get out.
No, certainly not. I would never bring anyone to Beit Din who I wasn't sure was good to go.
You mentioned that people obviously come from all different backgrounds and faiths. Is there like a specific or a particular like faith or background you see a lot of? Like, do you see like, are they 90% Catholics? Are they 90% Episcopalians? You know what I mean? Like, I'm so curious.
Yeah, I would say I have no numbers for you. Okay. This is just what I see in my office is that the majority, if they come from a faith, the majority are coming from Catholic. From Catholicism.
Is it because of that, you know, we share the shame basis? Is that what?
It is a little bit. It's more that they really love ritual, but don't love dogma. And so that's where you get liberal Judaism, right? It's like we understand ancient tradition. We understand ancient ritual and how powerful it is. And we don't want to put it aside. We want to put it at the forefront. And we're not going to mandate that your religion contradict the life that you lead.
Yeah.
And so I think that's probably why we get that background so much. And then not a faith, but mm-hmm. huge majority are coming from the LGBT community. So I would say most of my conversion students are coming from the LGBT community. And again, I think that's from lots of different faiths. So really being told mm-hmm. that religion and their identity don't mesh, mm-hmm. and then finding liberal Judaism and realizing that actually it can be there. Mm-hmm. And not only can your identity and your religious identity mesh, but your religious identity can actually lift up your other identities. Mm-hmm. And that's been a really positive experience to witness.
That is really, really cool. Yeah. I mean, that's really interesting that you say that. I mean, as a sort of obviously kind of a tongue-in-cheek person, just in general, like, you know, whenever I met, for example, like Italian Catholics in like the Northeast, and they're like, oh, I'm Catholic, you're Jewish. And we're like, oh, same, same. You know, we yeah, always joke sure. about that. It never about how it's like, oh, yeah, you get it. The shame, you know.
Yeah.
And like we say that flippantly, but like there is, I'm always curious about like having dealt with people from so many different backgrounds. Are there things, and I'm not saying like shame is an integral part of Judaism or Catholicism. I'm sure. just saying it's like, it makes a lot more sense to think about
don't
it.
Don't add her. Don't yeah. add her. Yeah.
God, just what we need. but I like that it makes a lot more sense when you point out that it's like, there is a almost like a code of conduct, right? Mm-hmm. It is. It's like the day to day, light the candles on Shabbat, mm-hmm. right? Like redo your Torah study on Saturdays. Like yeah. that makes a lot of sense with like, you know, it's the same as the Eucharist where it's like, this yeah. is just what we do. Mm-hmm. And so that bond of like timed, regulated stuff makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Do you feel like there are other like tenets or behaviors in Judaism or whatever that you see echoed in or mirrored or like parallel in certain other faiths? Like, I mean, I guess I'm thinking about, for example, women becoming, you know, bishops and pastors mm-hmm. In the Episcopal Church. Mm-hmm. And like, are there, for example, maybe evolutions of other religions that you sort of are like, oh yeah, we're kind of dealing with that too in Judaism.
Yeah. So it's interesting. In this space of conversion, I hear the opposite, right? I always hear the differences and not yeah. the similarities. And honestly, I wish I was I knew more about yeah. world faiths. It's one of the things on my bucket list. I do think that as certain, you know, sects of Christianity are becoming more liberal, that we're having more and more similarities. I also think in general, I have found that in general, people who identify as religious, mm-hmm. and I identify as religious, I think often people think Reformed Jews don't. I'm a mm-hmm. rabbi. I identify as religious.
That makes sense.
Have more in common with other people who identify as religious, almost no matter what religion that is. Right. That there's this underlying idea that something else is guiding our life, that there's mm-hmm. that there's a different type of meaning in our life where we can speak a similar language. Even if our religion is very different.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that that's one of the things that I really want to like just put out there is that the language of, I almost said the language of faith, but I think it's mm-hmm. really more the language of spirituality. Mm. The language of spirituality is almost universal.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, even when we have conversations about like Christ as love,
yeah.
it's like, yeah, if we're going to talk about universal love, we're talking about the same thing here that yeah. we're all sort of that spirit. And yeah. like, that's the point. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, it's interesting. I'm curious. Everyone, I'm sure, has their own. Everyone I know has their own specific, unique journey. But are there themes? Are there why? Like, do you notice a certain theme around people's why that they come to Judaism for?
Yeah, I think there's a few things. One is intentional community. Mm-hmm. I think more than God, more than spirituality, especially post-pandemic, people are looking for other people,
yeah.
but other people not in like a happy hour schmooze way, which is fine. That's fun.
We do that too, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. but more in a really in-depth, like who can I have deep conversations with? Who can I talk about mortality with, right?
Yeah.
Because suddenly this is all in our face all the time.
Yeah.
And who's asking those questions, not answering, but who's asking those questions is religion. And so I think that mm-hmm. that seems to be a big theme. For Judaism in particular, the thing that is like sort of the clincher that everyone's like, whoa, is that we have the ability to question,
mm-hmm.
right? That a Torah study in Judaism is going to be mainly questions, mm-hmm. not a lot of answers. Never is it going to be, at least in liberal Judaism, I would say, is it going to be like this passage is saying this and this mm-hmm. is the message for our lives and no other message is allowed.
Mm-hmm.
It's much more, well, what message are you finding, right? And I'm going to come in with my own ideas as the teacher and rabbi of the class, mm-hmm. but it's going to be much more organic about who's in the room and who's bringing themselves to this text and what questions are being asked. I have a lot of stories of people who are like, the Bible study that they grew up with is just so dogmatic. Mm-hmm. And so this is what it means. And if you don't like what it means, then you're not in the fold. And that really doesn't fit with people or the people that I'm talking to.
Yeah. And it's so funny because even as you're saying that, like, obviously whoever's listening can't see this, but I'm over here like wincing.
Yeah.
Where and I think like that's the stuff that makes Judaism, like you were saying, maybe it's a yes, culturally, yes, but and religiously, yes. But I think really more so it's a worldview. Mm. And it's that worldview of like, to me, expelling someone for not adhering to the dogma as opposed to embracing and answering their questions in ways that feel satisfying to them. Yeah. That to me is like, so it's just, it's not just antithetical to what like I understand religion is supposed to accomplish,
yeah.
but it's also just like counterproductive, right? If you yeah. want someone to be in the fold,
yeah.
wouldn't you just answer the questions?
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And I also want to be clear that there are some forms of Judaism that do have clear answers and clear in or out language, but certainly not the form of Judaism that I subscribe to, nor that I teach.
Yeah. And not the form that I was raised in.
Yeah,
and like,
exactly.
This is sort of where like all my curiosities are coming from, is that it's like, you know, I almost want to say it's like the invisible way of being that is just being Jewish, where it's like, I was raised with all this stuff. And to me, I'm like, I can't imagine the hurt that it would cause someone to be raised in a community and then told, well, if this one piece doesn't align with you, then I guess you don't really belong here.
Yeah. And what's amazing about that is that it can be, it's sort of a double-edged sword, because once a lot of these people find that, there's such a relief, like, oh my goodness, this community is going to open to my questions. There's actually probably no question that I can ask that's going to be offensive, wild, right? Because if you approach with curiosity, fine by me. And then on the other side of it, they realize that they weren't raised that way, right? And then that's the healing and hurt that happens. I'm missing out. There's a loss here of not growing up with like the booby who makes chicken soup and you know, had me with open arms.
Yeah.
And that's part of that conversion narrative that's really hard to teach. It's actually why a lot of the books I assign are narratives and not like history books, because I sort of want to provide them with authors who can be their booby, who can be their Zadie, who can be their Jewish family members, even when they have great relationships with their family members, right? It's just they're on a different journey.
Well, and also having Jewish family is different.
Because
I'm sure, like, I don't have I do have a Catholic stepmom, and I just worship her and love her and adore. Well, not worship, inappropriate in this context. But, you know, I adore
her.
Or
quite appropriate, but sure.
Or perfectly appropriate, indeed. And, you know, I would call her, you know, Jew adjacent, really, because she's deeply curious. She actually formally educated herself for quite a while after sort of taking an interest in us and how we were raised. And she's a lovely human, you know?
Yeah.
But yes, like the way that she moves through the world is different. And it's graceful and it's gracious in her own ways. And I believe that those reflect the values she was raised with. And those are instructive to me, too. But it's definitely not the same as like we all just sit around the table and talk over each other. And it's just everything all the time. And like, it can be a lot. Don't get me wrong.
For sure.
But like, it's like even when I moved here. And you know, my auntie is properly a booby as well. She's the matriarch of the family now. She's the eldest, my mother's eldest sister. And you know, I was living in the basement like you do. And the interrupting, it was just like causing me anxiety. And she would just laugh so hard and be like, did you forget? Like, this is just what we do. This is a Jewishy thing. We just interrupt each other because I had a thought and it's about your thought.
Yeah.
And now we're exchanging thoughts in the middle of our thoughts.
for sure. Absolutely. And it's a form of, I mean, what gets me about that is like, it's actually a form of respect for us, right? That like, I'm so excited about what you're saying. I literally cannot wait until you stop talking for me to say what I want to say.
Totally. Yeah. And I was raised that way, or I just was that way, I guess. And then interestingly, when I went to college and I lived in Savannah, so I was in Georgia for 10 years, that was really the place where people started just being like, all she ever does is interrupt. And I was like, how do I make people understand that I'm doing it because I'm excited and that it's because I love you and I care about what you're saying and I'm so interested? And it fully took me, I would say, into the last maybe 3 years to like find even psychological like research and literature on that, where it's like, especially for people with ADHD, where it's like, no, I'm participating.
Yeah, for sure.
It sounds like I'm not listening. It's the opposite.
But I'm here. I promise I'm here.
It's the opposite. I'm telling you, I'm listening right now.
Yeah,
I'm listening so hard.
For sure.
Okay. So that was kind of a digression.
All good.
But you know, that's what we do.
Part of it.
Oh my gosh. This is a funny question that I wrote down. And I don't know if this is even, have you noticed like an order of operations that's like a something like a goy to Jewish pipeline? Are there certain commonalities that you see in people's journeys that it's like, for example, like Laurel, where it's like, I started as Catholic and then I made my way through Episcopalian and then I made my way to Judaism. Like,
yeah, that's more rare, actually, of like trying out different things.
Yeah.
I sort of assumed before I got into it, before I really, you know, became part of the pulpit, that that would be the case, that everyone would sort of try out different things. Mm-hmm. More so, it's like if they're raised with some faith, they go far away mm-hmm. from the faith. Really are on their own and then find Judaism, right? Like they're really like sort of out in the outskirts of secular life and are not and find this the other way. And the other one is a lot of our students are not raised religious at all. And same thing, that they're always sort of missing something. They feel like they're missing something. They're always sort of jealous of the people, both at religious school, at Jewish religious school, but also at CCD and at other types of Sunday school, right? And are just sort of trying to find it and want it back. But usually it's not like a potpourri of different religions. I would say the main commonality is that someone invited them to a holiday or Shabbat.
That was going to be my next question. Yeah. Like, since we're not out there proselytizing, like, how the heck do people find it in the first place?
Yeah. So I would say Shabbat. I would say Shabbat, Passover, or High Holidays. That those three things are what people have said. Like, so I went to a Seder for the first time and just it blew my mind that like here was this big ritual and there was 30 people like with four different tables out in the living room. And
we drank four bottles of wine. Right. Glasses. We drank four glasses of wine.
And somehow talked about this oppression and freedom that happened thousands of years ago, but somehow made it relevant to us today. And I just, and there was a lot of joy when those topics are so dark. And how else could we do that? You know? And how else can I engage this way? And also for High Holidays as well, that for whatever, however they did, they got to a synagogue for High Holidays. And it was overwhelming to them. Overwhelming in a great way. And sometimes in like a scary way.
I mean, it is, they're the days of awe for a reason. And I certainly like, you know, I guess as you get older as a Jewish person, maybe this is common, like, you know, Hanukkah is your favorite holiday when you're a kid because there's presents involved, obviously. Yep. And then of course, Passover is everybody's favorite because we get to eat for hours and hours and hours and it's the best. But like Yom Kippur is my favorite holiday in the sense of like what I guess spirituality and religion in its best form accomplishes for us, which is renewal and introspection and tapping into that like super deep honesty of you can, you know, you can not fool, but like you can present however you want in this world. But where we have trouble then as humans is when we've bifurcated our identities in that way where our external self and our internal self aren't necessarily aligned. And you can never not feel that, even if you don't have the words for it, even if you don't necessarily know what's happening. If you are at discord with yourself, it always hurts you and it causes problems in relationships and everything. And Yom Kippur is the moment of like, you know better.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can always come home.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So Yom Kippur is also my favorite holiday for the same exact reason that it just feels like so the ritual is so it's not obvious, right? Like it's brilliant is what it is. But to be able to sort of to really engage with ourselves in a deep and meaningful way, to engage with our mortality in a deep and meaningful way and say that, we don't know what the year is going to be. And so I better figure out the way in which I want to behave right now because there who knows? And what's wild, and I'm not saying this is for everyone, I'm not generalizing that much, right? But if you were to ask sort of our everyday congregation, right? If you were to ask like, what's the deal with High Holidays with like most Jews, they would be like,
what's the deal with High Holidays?
Right? They would be like really long services. Oi, like we got to get out of there and then you get a bagel, right? And to be fair, I think services here at Washington Hebrew, very engaging.
I love them.
And in your local shul too, very engaging and
beautiful. Support your local shulism.
My goodness. And what I hear from our conversion students is like, I was sitting in this sanctuary. I didn't know anyone. I sat alone and I just started to cry and I don't know why. And it's just such a different experience, right? Such a different experience of tapping into that emotional religious space that I actually think Jews who are born Jewish, we do really poorly, right? Like we actually do sort of have decorum, even if we're going to interrupt each other all the time.
Yeah.
And we don't show emotion with our religion a lot, right? Like, we don't connect that way a ton. Of course, something's going on in your life. You have someone who's suffering, right? You've experienced a death. You are going to connect that way in the high holidays, and then you can't really contain it, right? Yeah. But I think that's an example of one of the strengths our community gets by including people who are choosing Judaism, is that they engage with our religion in such a different way and with such an amazing openness that I think we can all learn from them for that.
That is, I also love that perspective of, like, we're also better for bringing in people who have different relationships with our same, quote unquote, same faith.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You have, you know, as a person who has done, been part of at least some part of 40 of these this year, as a person who has, you know, as you say, dunked plenty of new Jews.
Yeah.
Is there something that feels new and special every single time? Like, do you have, like, a favorite moment, even if you're thinking of a specific one with one convert, like, or is there a favorite part of the process that, like, every time it happens to you, it feels new and special?
Yeah, I think there's two. The first is our first meeting, where every single person who comes to us comes to me into my office or my Zoom room thinks that they are the only person in the world who is, like, finding Judaism, right? That, like, they are alone in this, that they're kind of weird because even though America is a religious country, we find religion weird. It is so brave that they email our assistant and say, like, I think I want to do this. What do I do? And then get on our calendar and do it, right?
Yeah.
And the moment when I hear their story and then also share with them that they're not alone and there's this class of 70 people that they can join, and that we do about 40 of these a year, and that they realize that there's a whole community out there of people who are also finding Judaism and are loving it, their eyes light up. And it's so exciting to see someone immediately. They haven't met anyone new besides me, but they immediately don't feel alone. And, like, I can see it. I can see it on their face. And that's unbelievably moving.
Yeah.
And then the other one that I love, the other moment I love, is on the other end of it. I love mikvah. I love ritual bath. It's a beautiful, beautiful ritual that we do in Judaism that liberal Judaism is now kind of reclaiming. And it is an amazing moment of transition and of identity claiming. And to explain that to someone who's going through it, and to explain that this is sort of a rebirth, right? There's a reason religion uses water to cleanse you and to transition you from one identity to the other, right? That is sort of part of a rebirthing process. And to see that work for someone, right? To see this ritual that we've been doing for thousands of years, to see them really feel different and really, really, right? At that point, we say, like, it's just a stamp, your Judaism, right? Like, you've done the work, you're a Jew. Like, we just have to put a stamp on you. We don't actually put a stamp on them.
Yeah, also, just to be clear. Have to. But it's a lovely thing.
But it's lovely. And you can just see, you can see how meaningful it is for them to go into the water and then to come out different.
Yeah.
Different.
Yeah, I love it. Well, and that's the thing I think, you know, a lot of, you know, non-Jews can understand too, right? The idea of it's the same as the baptism and concept of, you know, you are cleansed, you are now here, you are fresh in us, and you are one of us, and you are welcome.
Exactly.
I love it. Well, is there anything else that you want to add or that should be just understood or that you would love to clarify perhaps about any of the process or just general, you know, what I'm calling Reform Judaism, but I noticed that you're calling liberal Judaism, which is interesting.
I mean, I can talk about that, but
that's another episode, which I would love to do.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, happy to say Reform Judaism too. I'm a very proud Reform Jew.
Please, yes.
I guess the last thing I'd say, and I'd hope it would be clear already, is that this process is not scary. The process of becoming Jewish is not scary. It's actually a really deep, engaging process of figuring out who you are. Right, who the person is. And yes, it's learning about Judaism. It's learning about prayers. It's learning about Shabbat. It's learning about holidays. But really, it's about learning about yourself and about who you are as a person and how this religion can help you be a better person, a more meaningful person, a more intentional person. And about learning, about learning about yourself and who you want to be.
And I think I'm just going to add to that a little bit, even though it's supposed to be your thoughts.
No, please, please.
The other thing, too, that I remember, you know, saying to my friend Nancy, for example, The other thing is that there's no wrong answers and there's no wrong path, right? You can go to every single class and then be like, actually, I'm going to skip the Beit Din. Thanks for everything.
Yeah.
You could go to none of the classes and just do all the readings. You could simply have the one conversation with, you know, Rabbi Fischel.
Yeah.
There's no wrong path. If any, if what you're seeking is a deeper connection to your own sense of, I think you said it best, like really just intentionality and meaningful engagement with your world. How can I just be a better person? And you're finding any guidance in that in studying Judaism at all, you're doing it right.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I love that.
Well, amen.
Beautiful.
Thank you so much for everything.
Yeah, for sure.
This has been Jew-ish. Thank you so much for listening. If you like what you hear, please follow or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Please do tell a friend. Word of mouth is the absolute best way to get the word out, as it were. Make sure you go back and listen to some of the other episodes in the Conversion series, especially with what Rabbi Fischel had to say. It might all be a little more clear now. And stay tuned. We've got at least one more for now. And don't worry, my Jewish mother is coming up. So thank you so much for listening, and please subscribe for more. Jew-ish is a Say More production.